Suns have a timeout. Decide not to call it. Booker the drive, gets inside, leans in. Knocked away and stolen by Holiday. Phoenix has to foul. And a pinnacle foul throws it down. And a foul. Giannis on the alley-oop. What a turnaround. On goal, rebound tip taken by Tucker. Knocked loose, back out to Booker. Final seconds, deflected. Paul, a three-pointer. It's over. The Milwaukee Bucks are one win away from their first title in 50 years as they win on the road to take Game 5.
Game 5 goes to the Milwaukee Bucks, and been telling you there have been a lot of warning signs for the Suns, and my head was telling me on Friday, pick the Bucks to win the game. My heart, because I was pulling for the Suns, and both Dusty and I picked the Suns to win Game 5, thinking home court advantage, and I looked pretty smart there when the Suns are up by 16. But the Bucks get the win, 123 to 119. One of the things that I have been saying, and welcome to the Sports Ticket, is that I've watched the Bucks play. I watch NBA during the season. I don't watch the whole games. I usually watch, you know, third, fourth quarter. I don't watch first quarter. And I watch the Bucks in the playoffs, and I have said this repeatedly over and over. The X factor for the Milwaukee Bucks is who?
Drew Holiday.
Drew Holiday, and we talked about it Friday. I said he's going to have a really good game. He's going to have a game where he's going to shoot well. He's going to have a great game. It's going to happen. The question is when. And my hope was Game 6, because then the Suns win Game 5, Game 6, he has a great game, and so we go to Phoenix for Game 7. Instead, Drew Holiday pulled out his best game of the series in the most important game of the series thus far, Game 5 on Saturday night. He was sensational. And when the Bucks, when they have Middleton and Holiday both going, because Giannis is usually going to get his, when they have Middleton and Holiday both going, this team is virtually unbeatable.
And right now, for sure, yeah.
The Bucks are winning games when two of their three were going. And you're just sitting here, and I've been thinking about it, and I've been saying it throughout the series. When Holiday plays well, the Bucks don't lose. And one thing about Holiday is, even though he's struggled offensively in the series, his defense has been important. Mm-hmm. He's a team player. And what you just heard there, you know, Giannis gets a lot of credit for the athletic slam dunk. But Drew Holiday, this is what I try to tell kids when I, whether I coach him or I tell my own kid this, now he plays basketball. You don't have to score all the points to be successful and help your team win. Mm-hmm. Now, the regular fan or the mom and dad that don't, you know, they're only worried about a box score. There are things that don't show up in a box score that help you win games. Coaches understand it. People that really, really know the game understand it. College coaches, recruiters. I was telling my son this. We were at Traveling Basketball in Kansas City. And I said, I'm going to tell you something right now. When college coaches are there watching, they don't go look at the box score and see how many points a guy had. They don't. They use their eyes. They take their notes. They watch your body language when things don't go well on the bench. They watch if you make the right pass. They'll make a note. You might make a shot with two people on you, and you made the shot and increased your scoring load that game. And they're going to put that as a negative because it was a bad shot. You should have passed it to the wide open guy. They don't care how many rebounds you average in a travel team. They don't care how many points you average. Same thing in college. You know, I've had this conversation with my oldest son. Why does the NBA draft guys that average 6 points in college? And they only played like, they weren't even starters. And by the way, Devin Booker wasn't a starter in college. Mm-hmm. The Kentucky was loaded with talent. He averaged like 10 points a game. He was the first player off the bench at the age of 18. Because they ain't worried about scoring averages. Why didn't Frank Mason make it in the NBA? Why didn't Todd Reesing and why didn't Eric Crouch make an NFL? They're not pro players. Mm-hmm. They were great college players. Well, why is a guy that won a Heisman can't do anything in NFL? Because they won an award on stats. But when you get to the pros, it ain't about they won't worry about your stats in college. They worry. Look at Cade Cunningham. He didn't have he wasn't the leading scorer in the country last year, was he?
No.
He's going to be the number one pick in the NBA draft. You know why? Because he does everything very well, and he's got upside. He can get better. It's called upside. And so when you watch a basketball game and you get all caught up in somebody scored a whole bunch of points, ask yourself this question: how many shots did it take to get to that many points? Because if it took you 25 shots and you scored 28 points, odds are you lost. Your team lost. You're taking most of the shots, whether you're hogging the ball, whether the coaches are calling for you to shoot it every time and not get anybody else involved. That's not usually good for your team when one kid takes all your shots. Now, if the other four on the floor can't shoot a lick, I get it. But this is a perfect example of two things that do show up in the stats statistically. But when you go look at a box score, you'll never understand what Jrue Holiday did. Mm-hmm. We just played the highlight. Jrue Holiday, the game was 120-119. The Suns had the ball. They elected not to call a timeout. They had it in Devin Booker's hands. He went into the lane. I thought he went too deep. I thought he had a shot about 15 feet. He passed it down. And Jrue Holiday cheated off his man because he saw Booker turned his head. And he went in, and we talk about this many times. Coaches teach it to guards. Dig, dig, dig. When a guy turns his head, go dig. Big guys hate that. Throw it in the post. That's why big guys are told, keep it high.
Yeah.
Don't bring it down. Make a move. Maybe one power dribble, and that's very questionable anymore. Guards are going to swipe. And so Jrue Holiday, there's two guys already on Booker, but Holiday sees an opportunity. It's instincts. It's basketball IQ. And that's what college coaches are looking for, athleticism and basketball IQ. They're not looking for a guy that forces the ball and scores 20 and somehow makes some wild shots. They're looking at a guy that can get to the bucket, beat guy off a dribble, make his team better, and if he can finish at the rim, great. But they're not looking at statistics. Jrue Holiday rips the ball away, which takes strength. And Jrue Holiday, if you look at his body, he's been working out.
Yeah.
Okay, he's in great shape. He rips the ball away from Booker. Not a tie-up, he rips it away. That's a steal, all right, in the stat book. Then he crosses half court. And most guys would have just backed the ball out, and that's that. And he saw Giannis, who always plays hard.
Mm-hmm.
Giannis running as fast as he can, gets behind Chris Paul. And no offense to Chris Paul, he's just short. And Giannis is tall. And Giannis goes, and they've done this many times. It's called teamwork, chemistry, camaraderie. And they made eye contact. And Jrue Holiday threw a perfect alley-oop. Giannis dunks it. And everybody goes nuts about how great the dunk is by Giannis, which was nice. The pass was phenomenal. In a situation when you're up one and Chris Paul fouled Giannis, which there are people online going, where's the foul? Are you blind? Chris Paul shoved him with two hands in his chest. That's a foul. And Giannis then got to the foul line, and they tipped the ball out after Giannis missed the free throw, of course, and they won the game. That was the game-winning play. That was the play that sealed it. Jrue Holiday on the final, in essence, the final play of the game, Jrue Holiday gets a steal and an assist.
Mm-hmm.
He made the play of the game, and he did two plays of the game. It was the steal, and it was the assist. There is a video of Jrue Holiday for the Bucks, and it is in slow motion, showing Jrue Holiday. And remember, this is in a span of just a few seconds, but they slowed it down in slow motion. Have you seen this video?
I haven't seen that.
Jrue Holiday, it shows him as he's crossing half court after he made the steal. Here's what he did, and this is stuff that you look for in a player. Jrue Holiday, as he crossed half court, he checked the clock. You can see his eyes check the clock.
Mm-hmm.
And then you saw him look out a corner of his eye to his right and then look up again. I don't know if it was to check the clock or make sure he was across the timeline, whatever it was. And then he threw the perfect pass. He knew the situation, and he still made the pass. He believed in himself, and that's what Jrue Holiday, it makes him special. He's had games where he was 4 of 20 in the finals. And he didn't give up on himself. And he didn't hang his head. He didn't let it affect his defense. He didn't let it affect his leadership. Giannis has been phenomenal this series when they talked to him in between games. And Giannis said, we told Jrue Holiday, dude, we know you keep shooting. We know you're going to make it. We know you're good. And Giannis would keep throwing it to Jrue Holiday. And Connaughton, when he's missing shots, Giannis is built, still trust. It's called trust. You trust your
Absolutely
teammates.
Absolutely, trust.
You trust your teammates. So I see in traveling ball a lot of teams that either kids hog the ball or they don't understand to trust their teammates. And if part of that is they don't play a lot together. They get together on the weekends. They don't have practices. Whereas these teams, whether it's college basketball teams or professional basketball teams, they're together almost all the time. They're traveling on road trips together in planes and charters. They're eating together, maybe not all at the same time, but when team functions, they are. They might not all love each other, but when they do all get along, there is a special chemistry. That's what was so special about the Royals in 2014 and 15. They had a special chemistry. Mm-hmm. They had great leadership, all right? There were guys that had fun with one another, like Lo Kane and Perez, you know? They were good buddies. It was a family. And the Bucks and the Suns are both really tight. And that's part of the reason why they're successful. But the Bucks the other night, they were down 16. No problem. They get red hot in the second quarter. They go 17 of 24 from the field, 6 of 9 from 3. One of the best offensive quarters of the entire playoffs. And the Bucks get 88 points from their big three players. The first time they've all been on. And they won. And to Phoenix's credit, Phoenix almost still found a way to win. Giannis had 32. Middleton had 29. Jrue Holiday had 27 points, 13 assists, only 2 turnovers, 12 of 20 from the floor, 3 of 6 from 3, and oh yeah, had the steal of the game and the pass of the game to close out the game. Those are the type of players you need to win championships. You absolutely have to have it. You need guys that are willing to be the second and third wheel, not the first wheel. And then you have to have a star that's willing to share. And Giannis is, and Chris Paul is, and Devin Booker is. Both teams are great. Both teams have chemistry. Both teams have very, very, very good coaches. These teams deserve to win the title, both of them, but only one's going to. And right now, I'm putting a fork in it. The Suns are cooked. This series is over. That's my prediction. I hope I'm wrong. Mm-hmm. I would love to see the Suns win, but I'll tell you why the Suns aren't going to win here in a moment. But first, let's hear from Mike Budenholzer on the play of the game, Jrue Holiday, the steal, and then the presence of mind to throw the perfect alley-oop. And remember, if you somehow the ball goes to Giannis, he's missing free throws left and right, so you get a dunk for Giannis, and even if he misses the free throw, you're still up 3, which he did. He missed the free throw, but they got the rebound off the tip. Here's Coach Budenholzer on the play of the game by Jrue Holiday.
You know, I think it's just an instinctive play. He's an incredible defender and strong hands and got in there and took it. And, you know, I think, you know, probably most times you want to just pull it out and run the clock. But Jrue and Giannis in a 2-on-1 and just to put 2 points on the board, I think just, you know, trusting their instincts, trusting them. You know, Giannis getting a bucket and putting us up. You know, they're competing, and that's what we need.
I was a little bit concerned even when the Suns were up 2-0. Dusty knows this. We talked about it on the show. If you listen to the show on a regular basis, you know that there's been warning signs. And then when the Bucks won game 3, I was like, you know, you've got this situation now where they've made adjustments. And anybody that gets all riled up when a team's up 2-0 when they've only won their 2 home games and they're not even gone on the road yet, it's premature to say the series is over. And I didn't see a lot of people say the series was over, but it was like, how in the world are the Bucks going to make adjustments defensively? There's just no way they can. And it's like, well, yeah, it looks tough. But what the Bucks have done is they've made the adjustments and the Suns haven't counter-adjusted. And that's what makes for a series, and that's why they play best out of 7. You can win one game by 50 points, and that's lost a game where they were down 49, the Bucks did, to the Nets. Came back, won the series down 2-0. They're down 16 to Phoenix, no big deal the other day. Come back and win. There's something special and unique about the Bucks basketball team this year. I didn't think the Bucks would be able to do it. I thought they'd lose to the Nets, and if the Nets were healthy, I still think the Nets would have won. But the Bucks have been resilient. And in this series, they made a few adjustments. And one of the biggest adjustments they made involved Jrue Holiday. I don't understand why teams didn't do it earlier in the playoffs. And I hear, well, they don't have the right personnel. And I'm like, that's a bunch of baloney. Why didn't teams pressure Chris Paul? He's 36. Why don't you put some pressure on him bringing the ball up and try to wear him down? Why do you just let him easily just jog it up the floor and then pick him up at the three-point line? Why? Why do you do that? The teams don't have the personnel to do that. The Lakers... they got guys that can guard Chris Paul bringing up the floor. Like, I don't know, Alex Caruso, who's a pretty good defender. Trust me, he could have done that. And their coach chose not to do it. And Paul was playing with one arm, okay, for the first 3 or 4 games of that series. So that's bad coaching. The next series for the Suns, was it the Clippers? Was the next series?
Denver, right?
Denver.
Yeah.
Denver. Now, I don't know what Denver, but Will Barton had been hurt. He would have been a good guy to do. I don't know about Denver. The Clippers had Patrick Beverley, one of the best defensive guards, who is a pest. And he wasn't pressuring Paul up the floor all the time. Why not? Mm-hmm. The Clippers are a deep team. I didn't understand that. And the Bucks didn't do it the first couple games. And Chris Paul had two big games, didn't he? Since the Bucks have put more pressure on Chris Paul, bringing the ball up the floor. And granted, Chris Paul Saturday night was not bad. He was not good in game four, but in game five, Chris Paul was 9 of 15, 21 points, 11 assists, a couple turnovers. That's a solid game for Chris Paul. It is. But it still had an effect on the game. The Bucks and Jrue Holiday making that change and just making Paul exert more energy, bringing up the floor, making them get into their offense a little bit later in the shot clock, has changed this series. It is a very small change that I thought was fairly obvious, but the Bucks were the ones that employed it. And the reason they feel they can employ it is because they've got an outstanding defensive guard who's a complete player in Jrue Holiday. The knock on Holiday is he's not aggressive enough sometimes, and he will disappear offensively. He'll still take shots, but he just a little up and down. Charles Barkley talked to him one time during the playoffs and said, dude, there are people around this league that say you're one of the best guards in the league, but why don't you? You should score 25 every night. And Drew's like, I'm trying. He came up huge the other night. And here's, to me, that was one of the reasons why the Bucks have taken control of this series. The other problem for the Suns, and this is why I think the Suns are cooked, and they better get back to the way they used to play. And if you're a Suns fan, you know what I'm talking about. Devin Booker scoring 40 points is great and all. And what is the Suns' record when he scores 40 in this finals? They're 0-2.
0-2. I didn't know if they...
No, he never had 40 over
it
before.
Didn't have it in the other game.
No.
Yeah.
They're 0-2. In game four, Booker shot the ball 29 times, made 15, which you say, well, that's not bad. It's 50%. 15 of 29. The next amount of attempts for a Phoenix Suns player is Chris Paul with 13. Booker took 29 shots. He made 15. And what did they do? They went ISO ball. They went ISO ball. It was a lot of ISO ball, one-on-one. And defense is pretty good. Booker made some great shots. Everybody's talking about how great Booker is. And while Booker's doing that, and we talked about this Friday, when Booker's doing that, guys like Cam Johnson, Mikal Bridges, even DeAndre Ayton, and to an extent even Chris Paul, are left watching. They become spectators. And if Booker kicks it, you got to be ready to shoot. That's not how the Suns played throughout the season.
No.
That's not how the Suns played in games one and two of the NBA Finals. They were running pick and roll left and right. They were getting mismatches. And people were like, there's no way Lopez can stay on the floor. He can't guard anybody. And the Suns have gotten away from some of that. Saturday night, you know how many shots Devin Booker took?
I don't.
You want to take a guess? He had 29 in game four. How many do you think he had in game five?
32.
33. Very good. You know how many he made? 17.
Yeah.
So once again, he shot 50% from the floor. How many shot attempts do you think the next guy got on the team?
12, something like that.
15. Chris Paul at 15. Yeah. He was 9 of 15.
Oh, yeah. You just said
right
earlier I should have been paying more attention to
that's
that.
That's okay. That's all right. DeAndre Ayton did have 12 attempts. That's a little bit better than what he had in game four. So the Suns shot 87 times, which is that even... even look right here. Yeah, maybe that is right. Okay, so 87 shots, and Booker took, what's 33 into 87? About 38%? 33 into 87.
Everything pulled up here. There we go. Yeah, 38%.
38. Hey, my math's not bad without using a calculator.
Yeah.
38%. So, and the last game, I don't know how many of the total attempts they had. Devin Booker's taking more than two times as many shots as anybody else on the team, including Chris Paul. I don't think that's good. And you can sit here and say, well, come on, Wade. Booker scored 40. Booker scored 42. Booker still shot 50%. Listen, when you shoot it 33 times and you make 17, that's a nice night. No question about it. But how are you getting those 17 buckets? Devin Booker's getting the 17 buckets by one-on-one making tough shots. If you told me, I would have no... There's a difference between these two things. Booker playing iso ball 17 of 33, that's not good for the team. Booker playing pick and roll basketball, ball movement, and then, yeah, in crunch time they give it to him, you know, pick and roll basketball, or maybe we do iso him a little bit, and he goes 17 of 33. It's different. It's different because your other guys are involved. Your other guy, like Mikal Bridges, he took only 6 shots the other night, and he was 5 for 6 and 3 for 3 from threes. Maybe we should play more pick and roll so then we get these mismatches like you were doing in games one and two, and then you can kick at the Bridges and Booker doesn't have to take 33 shots. To me, Booker was playing so well in game four after a bad game three. Game four, he played so well, and the Suns just kept going to it and going to it and going to it, and Booker had gotten foul trouble. Then they struggled when he was off the floor. They're putting too many eggs in that basket. They're putting too many eggs in the Devin Booker basket. And it's not a knock on Devin Booker. He's a phenomenal player. And he's not a ball hog. He's not a ball hog.
No.
This is the way they're playing. And I don't understand Monty Williams and what they're doing. Monty Williams, I think, is a very good coach. I like some of the things he says in locker room afterwards. I think he's an amazing, amazing coach. He's done a wonderful job. But right now, he's getting out-coached. Mike Budenholzer, or maybe he simply has the worst team of the two. Because Mike Budenholzer has three guys that he... look at the box score. Booker had 33 shots. Paul had 15. Go to the Bucks. Look at this. Giannis, 23. Middleton, 23. Holiday, 20. That's called balance.
Yeah.
That's called balance in regards to shot attempts. Made buckets. Giannis, 14. Middleton, 12. Holiday, 12. Suns, 17. Booker. Paul has 9. Twice as many. So Giannis is out. And think about this for a second. In game two, Giannis scored 42 points, and they lost.
Mm-hmm.
There have been – now, Middleton scored 40, and they won, and Booker had 42 that night. But it is interesting to see guys like – in game two, Giannis had a big game, and nobody else was fully involved, and they missed some shots. And Giannis, that was the second game back from the injury, he had 42, and the Bucks got beat by 10. Booker had 42. They lost by 6. He had 40 the night. They lost, and they were down double digits in the fourth quarter after leading by 16. This is the Suns have to get back to playing their brand of basketball. They have gotten away from what they do well. Whether the Bucks have forced them into doing that, I don't know. I don't know if it's because Holiday's pressuring Paul to where Paul gets the set going later in the shot clock to where all you can do is ISO, which I don't believe that. Because ISO, what happens is you just stand around. It's as simple as that. You play ISO ball, you're standing around. Your teammates are standing around. And the Bucks, if you notice, they aren't playing nearly as much ISO ball. Every once in a while, they throw it to Giannis, and he's going to be facing up. He'll back a guy down, okay? But they're playing a lot of pick and roll with Middleton and Giannis, and that's been very difficult for the Suns to defend. And the other reason why the Suns are in trouble, their defense has gone south.
Mm-hmm.
Their defense isn't what it was earlier in the series, although it wasn't great early in the series either. And they don't have an answer for Giannis. Giannis could have scored 40 or more every game in this series.
Mm-hmm.
But he's being a good teammate, trusting, and he knows I better have Middleton and Holiday involved. Booker, I'm not saying he's hogging the ball. I think that's just what they want him to do. But they have gotten away from what they do so well. So game 6 is coming up on Tuesday, tomorrow night in Milwaukee at 8 o'clock. And here's another reason why I think the Suns are cooked. They have Chris Paul and Jay Crowder who've been in situations like this before. Although Chris Paul, I don't think, has come back from 3-2 in situations like this. He has certainly been part of 3-1 leads and not winning it. The Suns are so young. We've talked about how talented they are, but they are so young. I just think this team is too young now to get in this situation to win 2 straight. And on top of that, unless somehow they can get back to playing what was Suns basketball. And if they're going to continue to have Devin Booker shoot the ball 35 to 40% of the time, they're not going to win tomorrow night. Devin Booker shooting it 30 or more times is not a recipe for this team to win in the playoffs. It might be a recipe to win a game in the regular season. Okay? It might be a chance to win a game early in the playoffs. But it is not a recipe to win against the best of the best from the Eastern Conference. The Bucks have more offensive weapons with the three-headed monster when Holiday's going. The Suns right now, offensively, who do they have? They have Booker, and they have a 36-year-old point guard who maybe is getting a little bit tired, although not bad the other night. And their other scorer is who? Ayton.
If
they don't get in transition, Ayton didn't get a lot of buckets. They're not running pick and roll as much, so Ayton isn't scoring as much, although he did the other night. Ayton did have 20. I take that back. He did have 20. And 10 rebounds. So that's certainly a step in the right direction because Ayton was not nearly as big in game 4. But he's not a guy that just you're going to throw him to the ball and he's going to turn and make plays in the post. They don't throw him the ball very often, which I think they should. And I think Ayton needs to demand the ball more in the low block. But it's the way they play. But they are not going to come back and win this series, continue to play the way they have, playing ISO ball with Devin Booker. It is a recipe for losses, and it's what's happened the last 2 games. It's almost like, listen, we have to win game 4. That's the way the Suns played it, which makes sense. You don't want to be 2-2. Then they played in a must-win. They felt like in game 5, they played it as if there was a ton of urgency, and rightfully so, and it's like Booker's is our best chance to win. And you're putting too much on Booker's shoulders on top of it all, too. He isn't Kobe Bryant. And by the way, even Kobe Bryant didn't win games like this.
Mm-hmm.
Because he had guys like Shaq. He had another guy he could, Pau Gasol. I mean, Kobe, I'd have to go back and look at the numbers. Yeah, there's probably games where he shot 30-some times and they won some playoff games.
Yeah.
But in the NBA Finals...
He had to.
He did. He had to.
Yeah.
But in the NBA Finals, I don't know how many times he did that. But, and Kobe, what to me, was more of a forced shot, maybe hog the ball sometimes, compared to Booker.
That wasn't... That's a different situation.
Absolutely.
Of how they play the game. I mean, there are some flashes, I feel like, in Devin Booker's game of a Kobe Bryant.
And his mentor
was
Kobe Bryant.
But as far as how they're doing that within what they do, Devin Booker's not the guy that's just going to be like, this is my team, get out of the way. He's going to do it when his coach tells him to.
Right.
And when that's what they're running.
Right.
But he's not the guy that's going to demand that just right out of the gate. Say, this is how we're playing, get used to it.
I'll tell you another problem, too, for the Suns is they only shot 11 free throws. And they made 10. Only two guys went to the line.
Devin
Booker and DeAndre Ayton. The only guy that's going to go to the line is the guy that has the ball, usually, and that's Devin Booker. So that means Chris Paul is an outstanding foul shooter. Here's the other problem with this. Chris Paul doesn't have the ball in his hands as much when you go ISO with Booker, and I think that's a mistake, too.
Yeah, because he is a better free throw shooter than Booker, too.
They're both great foul shooters.
I would say, like, in clutch moments, right, I would Chris
Booker's
Paul's
80% foul shooter.
Yeah, Chris Paul's a guy that I might want to have the ball in his hands just because what you're talking about with experience, right?
And no, I agree.
I feel like, well, and when you're running that ISO ball, you know, I think Monty Williams kind of subtly complained about the amount of free throws, obviously, that Giannis had compared to his entire team. I think that was game three.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, when you play this kind of ball and you're not active with your pick and roll like you were earlier, you're not going to the line as much.
That's exactly
it's just
right.
obviously going
to
happen.
And they're not going to let Booker go all the way to
aggressive.
The cup one-on-one with help defense everywhere. Yeah. They're going to make him shoot tough shots.
Yeah, I mean, you've got... When you're ISO, Holiday's a very good one-on-one defender anyway, right? Mm-hmm. And then you're having guys come in. Like, you can suck Giannis in if Booker tries to get to the rim when you're playing that way. And so you're not getting as many attempts. And I don't know. This is something that's weird to me about this whole thing is I felt like we would see this issue with the Suns earlier in the playoffs, their youth, right? The fact that they hadn't been here. What's interesting to me is it's happening against a team that's the same as them from that aspect.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have that kind of experience, really, in the NBA Finals. They've not, you know...
The Bucks have a lot more playoff experience, though.
Yeah.
They've been to the Eastern Conference Finals. They've been to the second round. They have a lot more playoff experience than the Suns.
But based on how this whole thing's gone... You'd think it would have happened against a team that has even more experience than what the Bucks have.
Right.
I mean, the Western Conference Finals were definitely different without Kawhi.
Right.
That might have been a different series. But, you know, and injuries have played a part in that, I think, of helping the Suns get to where they're at. I mean, I'm not trying to take anything away from
them. Well, it's true. I mean, AD got hurt, and then Jamal Murray was out, and then Kawhi Leonard
was out for most of that series, too.
And Giannis was – I told my son this last night. This is the thin margin of error you have. Think about this for a second. Giannis, it looked like when he got hurt in the previous series, his season was over.
Yeah.
And the Bucks were toast. And then somehow he comes back and it's okay, hyperextended knee, and now he's back to look 100%.
Yeah.
And they're going to probably win an NBA title. I go back to, remember Mahomes, messed up the kneecap in Denver. I thought the season was over. And then somehow he recovered within a few weeks and played again, and the Chiefs won a Super Bowl. You need luck. You need luck. I mean, Giannis could have easily ripped up his knee, and it looked like he did.
Yeah.
Looked like Mahomes was toast that year. And then they survived those scares and went on to win. Well, I think the Bucks are going to win a championship tomorrow night. And the Chiefs, of course, won the Super Bowl. And you do need a little bit of luck. But you're right. The Suns have gone through three teams that lost star players. Anthony Davis got hurt late in the series. That changed that series, no doubt. It was even when he got hurt. Jamal Murray, with Nuggets not having him, they're a much different team. And no Kawhi makes the Clippers definitely a different team. And I'll tell you one more thing about the whole Devin Booker shooting at 33 times. And, I mean, he's got to take tough shots. That makes him spend a lot of energy.
Mm-hmm.
And if you haven't noticed, Devin Booker is not quite as good defensively the last couple games either.
Yeah.
He's spending so much energy offensively, that's now hurting the team on the defensive end of the ball, side of the ball, too. So another fallout, an issue, when you have a guy going ISO so much, trying to make his own shot one-on-one, like they are with Booker, it's hurting you on the other end as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's... That's how it's going to be at every level, right? When you're exerting that much energy.
Absolutely.
Where do you, like, that's why a lot of these teams nowadays just like pull their, you know, when Jordan would guard the best player on the other team, a lot of these teams have that set up to where our guy's working so hard offensively that I don't want him gassed on defense.
Right.
Send him on, put him on somebody else. And but that can be a liability even if they're on somebody else. But it's like it's just kind of a different way of looking at it when they know that their guy's putting too much effort in offensively, but we need him to score points and we need him on that end of the floor.
I'll give you one more example. Here's another added benefit what the Bucks have done by pressuring Paul, or at least being a pest on to him when he brings the ball up the floor. When he expends more energy to bring the ball up the floor, Chris Paul's not the greatest defensive player in the world.
No.
At the age of 36, he's a bit of a liability at times, okay? He also has less energy defensively. Yeah. I mean, if you start putting this together, the way the Suns are in their offense is affecting how they play defense with their two best players, Chris Paul and Devin Booker, because the Suns absolutely could stop nothing the other night. And and they're a good defensive team, but their two players I think are getting tired, but in particular Devin Booker, and how could you not? And I just think they're putting way too much on Devin Booker, and I don't think they have to. I think they got enough players. They got enough talent. I don't think they have to go this route, and I think it's a major tactical mistake. And I think the Bucks are thrilled. I think if you talk to the Bucks quietly off the record, they're like, dude, we'll let Booker shoot 30 to 40 times a night. We don't care if he gets 50.
Yeah.
Because that means we're going to probably win. I mean, we've talked about this before. When Michael Jordan, sure, when Jordan scored a lot of points, yeah, they won games sometimes. But when the Bulls won games in an NBA Finals, Jordan, and yes, he had a stretch where he had four straight games of over 40. But if you watch Jordan and go back and watch his games in NBA Finals, the two three-peats, especially the second three-peat, he would pace himself. Like, he wouldn't even worry about scoring early in the game, usually. He'd get his teammates involved, and then he knew when it was go time. So he might still shoot 25 shots or 30 shots, but he knew when it was go time, and he might have 40. But when
he'd run up these, like, 16 to 18-point quarters in the third and fourth, just adding to even in the second sometimes if they needed it.
But he got his teammates involved. Yeah. They were a part of the game, you know what I'm saying? So
exactly,
they got into a bit of a rhythm. That's what he did. And Magic Johnson was great at that, too. And so Jordan... Then, when it was crunch time, you know, he was like, okay, this is it. We're going to finish it. But if you go back and look at the records, and I can assure you of this, and I don't have it in front of me, but go back and look at what the winning percentage was of Michael Jordan when he scored 45 or more, or even 40 or more, in the NBA playoffs. Go back and look at the winning percentage. The Bulls were better when Jordan scored, honestly, 30 to 39 in that range, or even 25. Because Pippen was involved and other guys were involved and Kerr was making threes or, you know, Horace Grant was making jump shots. I mean, that was important. And right now, Mikal Bridges, I think, is a good player. He scored 13 points on six shots. I mean, maybe he needs a couple more looks. Cam Johnson's an outstanding shooter, Dusty.
Yeah.
Cam Johnson, 2 for 3. That's it. He had three shots. He was 2 for 2 from three. So think about this for a second. Mikal Bridges and Cam Johnson. I know they're not superstars. Those guys the other night played a combined 54 minutes. 54 minutes. Between the two of them, they were 7 of 9 and a perfect 5 of 5 from 3. Now, I'm not sitting here saying Mikal Bridges and Cam Johnson need to get 15 shots a game. But if they're shooting at that percentage, they might need a few more looks.
Mm-hmm.
So thus, why are we letting Booker just go one-on-one all the time and wearing himself out, taking these tough, tough shots that, granted, he's making, but there's going to be a time where he's going to start missing these shots. And I worry if it's – I worry tomorrow night if they try to go the same offensive strategy with Booker and the Suns keep doing this tomorrow night and Booker has an off night, what are they going to do? Are they going to go back – that might be a blessing in disguise. If he's off early tomorrow night, they might go back to the way they should play. Because I think it's a gigantic tactical mistake by the Suns, what they've been doing. I'm watching them the last two games. I'm like, this isn't what they do. Why are you changing what you do in the NBA Finals? Yeah. You were up 2-0. The Bucks made changes. Now you got to make changes. And if your change is going to iso ball, and that's what your big change is with one player, then the Bucks just absolutely pulled the wool over your eyes. And they've won the coaching battle. So I hate to be too harsh, but this is not Suns basketball. It is not a winning formula, and it's been proven the last two games.
Yeah.
Can they win one game playing that way, and Booker goes for 50? Possibly. But this is not the same Suns team I saw beat the Lakers, moving the ball and being quicker. And the other thing the Bucks have done, they have limited the Suns in transition. Remember after game two, Monty Williams said, the Bucks are a good defensive team. We want to push the pace. We've got to score and get some easy buckets. Are the Suns getting easy buckets now? Not as many.
No.
Not as many. So then what does that mean? That means the Suns are in a half-court offense more often, right? Which means they could run pick and rolls if they wanted to, and sometimes they do. But instead, that seems to be their answer to trying to get buckets instead of transition buckets, because they don't get them now, is we're going to make it up by going ISO with Booker. And it's not – Booker's taken 62 shots over the course of the last two games. The next guy, highest shot attempts, Paul with 28. You're telling me Chris Paul should only get 14 shot attempts a game and Booker should get 31? That's not how you got here. That's not how you got here. Devin Booker scored 70 in an NBA game in his career. You know what? They lost by 10. I mean, I'm frustrated, as you can tell. I'm frustrated with the Suns in their offensive approach. And you got to give the Bucks a lot of credit. They have forced the Suns into something that either they're choosing to do that they shouldn't do.
That's what my question
is. Bucks have, I don't know if the Bucks have caused it or if the Suns have just flat out thought Booker's our guy, we're going to ride him. I don't get it.
It's none of it makes sense.
Paul's too tired, so we got to let Booker carry all the weight on offense because they're pressuring him up the floor. Is that it? Well, I mean, this just, then you have to sit here and say they only have two offensive players because Ayton, he doesn't seem to like get it in a regular half court setting except pick and roll alley-oops. He doesn't get, they don't call much for him. Like to post up.
Here's the thing, it feels like once Saric went out.
Yeah.
And then cuz game 3 Ayton was lights out, just nails early in the game. Had double figures in the first quarter. Got in foul trouble. Mm-hmm. And I feel like with Saric out and Ayton getting foul trouble, they changed all their pick and roll stuff and everything active with Ayton because maybe they felt like they needed him in the game. You might get moving screens. You might pick up cheap fouls or something.
Yeah.
That they've changed what they're doing. That's the only thing in my mind that can come in. Mm-hmm. Because he was lights out at the beginning of game 3.
Yeah.
Like he had, I think, 16 in the first quarter.
He's the main pick and roll guy with Paul.
Yeah, and so he's going to be doing these things. And I don't know if Monty Williams is like, we can't have you in foul trouble. We need you out there. So we're going to take away something that might get you some cheap ones.
And so they're not running as many pick and rolls.
And so he's not getting as many looks offensively because that's the only way you're getting him involved.
Yeah.
Is if he's active offensively.
Absolutely.
Because he's not going to be a guy, like you said, he's not going to get the touches. And he's not a guy that can just go find something and create it for himself, right? And so I don't know. I realize that your personnel got limited a little bit because you don't want to probably rely on Frank Kaminsky, right? But once he got in foul trouble in game 3, I feel like this whole thing just changed. Because first game, you're like, I don't think the Bucks have anybody that can counter the athleticism and everything that Ayton's doing if they play their game, if they play that pick and roll game, and there's so many things that they have to worry about. And now, like I say, I'm trying to decide if the Bucks are making them do this or if it was just a decision they made to try to keep him out there and keep him out of foul trouble. I don't know.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point. That's a very good point.
I hadn't thought about that.
I think the whole
concept of what Phoenix is doing changed, I feel like, in that moment.
And if what you're saying is true, then a role player that doesn't score hardly at all that got hurt changed the complexion of this series.
Yeah.
And we try to tell people role players are important.
Yeah, and by changing that, it changes everything everybody else does,
absolutely.
Right? Because all Cam Johnson does is knock down shots when he's open in the offense that they're running normally.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Like you said, he doesn't get it, the attempts that he might want, but those attempts come when you can
spread the floor,
be balanced, right? Mm-hmm. Be well balanced offensively and throw the other team off balance.
Right.
That's what the Bucks are doing to the Suns right now. Mm-hmm. They're balanced with everything they're doing, and they're throwing the other team off balance because of something. And I can't explain everything about it, but campaign, Cam Johnson, all these guys, Bridges, everything changes for them when they're not in the right offense.
The other thing the Bucks do very well is that so when the Suns go ISO, okay. Booker, most of his shots are contested jump shots. They've got
trying to adjust midair.
Tucker and Holiday have guarded Booker. Holiday a little bit more in the last game, but Tucker is a good defender. We saw him against Durant, make Durant work. Tucker, Holiday, Middleton can play good defense too. They can rotate those guys and play Booker. Those guys rarely get beat off the dribble. So when Booker is scoring these points, which is impressive, 17 of 33, he's making jump shots. So what that means is that they don't have to help off a shooter. When you go ISO ball, let me try to explain this. So when Booker's going iso ball, that's one-on-one. That's what it is. If you're wondering what iso ball is, it's one-on-one. It's simple as that. And so they just went go ahead. Sometimes it's a 1-4 set. Sometimes they have them set up on the wing. They've got a guy in the corner. They got maybe a guy in the lane. And then they got two guys on the other side. They're spreading the floor, and they want to have iso ball. Okay, iso ball works really well when you got a guy that can't keep Booker in front of him. Mm-hmm. But Tucker and Holiday, they give up ground. And Booker might be able to get to 15 feet. But they're not giving up the easy layup. They're not getting blown by, and Booker's getting a layup. Or breaking them down to where Booker can drive and then alley-oop it to Ayton. So when Booker's scoring, he's earning it. But my point of this is, when Booker is out on the perimeter playing iso ball, okay, the other guys can stay with their man for the most part. They don't have to work. So like, iso ball, where it would really work is if Booker could beat the guy off the dribble and then, of course, just go all the way to the rim and finish, or drive and then kick. But there's nobody to kick to because Holiday and Tucker are good enough to where Booker has got to go about 12 feet in the lane. All of a sudden, somebody's there called Giannis. And now he's got to put up a tough shot or flip it out to Paul, and the shot clock's winding down. That's their offense right now. Mm. I mean, watch the play that just – I think the play that lost in the championship was the other night on the play we just played when Holiday made the steal. Go watch the play. It is iso. Devin Booker is going in. Yeah. It's a complete iso again. And Booker goes all the way. And I'm telling you, he had a 15-foot jump shot. Tucker was on his heels. It wasn't going to be an easy shot because Booker's going to have to fade a little bit. But that's a shot he can make. And that's the shot I thought he was going to take. Instead, he passed on it. He went one or two more dribbles deeper. Now, guess who he had? Giannis was all over him. Tucker able to recover. And then Holiday from behind is the one that ripped it away. That is a perfect microcosm of why iso ball is not working on that play, was because Booker had nowhere to go with the ball because they have good enough defenders to at least stay with Booker long enough to where he still has to take some kind of jump shot. Yes, it might be 12 instead of 22 feet. You may say, well, Booker got closer to the bucket, so how is that good defense? It's good defense because you're funneling him to the big guy, and they got a little bit of help with Giannis, but they don't need the other guys to help. Thus, Mikal Bridges and Cam Johnson aren't open. That's what makes the Bucks special too. We talk so much about the three guys that score all the points. PJ Tucker doesn't hardly score at all, but he has an impact because of his defense. Middleton and Holiday and Giannis are all outstanding two-way players. They can all play defense. Paul is a bit of a liability defensively. Booker at times is because I think he's worn out. And Ayton's a very good defensive player. Crowder's a good defensive player. Bridges is a good defensive player. I mean, both teams got good defensive players, but The tactical strategy by the Suns, I question. Now, Max, of course, is getting his shot in. You got to love this. So Max goes, come on, Wade, let the stars shoot. Laugh out loud. Now, see, Max, this is where you take things out of context, my friend. You're completely discombobulating the story and the point that we're trying to make. Okay, so let me go ahead and shift it to what Max wants to talk about. Because what Max is talking about is when I've said, listen, at the end of a game, you need one shot. You need a shot from your best. You need a shot to win the game. Or either you're tied or you're down. And I've said this, and I will continue to say this till I'm dead, and you can write it on my tombstone for all I care. Max, you can write it on my tombstone. Please do. And I will go with this till the day I die. You, in a situation where it is you need a bucket to win the game, you draw up a play for your best player. Simple as that. You don't draw it up for Cam Johnson.
Yeah.
You don't draw it up for Mikal Bridges. You don't draw it up for Jay Crowder. You don't draw it up for Brook Lopez. You draw it up for Giannis or Middleton, because Middleton's kind of 1A, 1B. Okay? They're both stars. They're both all-stars. Middleton's going to be an Olympian. So you can say those two. Those are their two superstars, right?
Yeah.
So if I'm Mike Budenholzer and the game's on the line, who am I drawing up to play for? It's Middleton or Giannis. And you know what they do? And they did it the other night. Pick and roll with those two guys. Mm. Nobody else is involved on the play. You know why? Because it's your two best players, and you need a bucket. When you need a bucket really bad, you go to your best players. If you're in the game in the second quarter and the other team's on a 10-0 run and they got all the momentum, guess what? You go to your bread and butter play. Mm-hmm. You go to the play that you're like, dude, this is our best play. We're going to go to it. We're going to get a bucket and slow this momentum down so I don't have to call a timeout and I can save it later. When you really, really, really need a basket, When you need a basket at the very end of a game, especially when your season's on the line or you simply just trying to win a ball game, you go to your best player. And I've said this, and Max knows. This is why he's having fun with me. And thanks, Max, for getting me riled up. So I've said, I don't care if the guy's 2 for 20 or the gal's 2 for 20. If that's my best player and that's my best player all year long, I'm riding that player and I'm going down with my best gun in the gunfight. All right? I'm not going with this old gun that can barely fire. I'm going with the one that's going to fire. I know one that's the most accurate. I'm going to go with, if I'm going in a gunfight and it's 3-on-3, you know, whatever it might be, I want to have my best gunslingers that are the quickest on the draw to shoot. I'm not going to get the person just learn how to fire a gun, okay? Hello? I'm going with my best gunfighters at the OK Corral. And that's what I'm going to do in basketball. And the same way in football. If I'm going to drop a play for the Chiefs to win a game, I'm going to have the ball in the hands of Kelce, Hill, or Mahomes. And Mahomes is always going to have it anyway.
Yeah.
That's why when they threw a pass to Blake Bell in a game against Tennessee, you're like, what the bleep are you doing? He's your backup tight end. Hello, that's not the play. That's why Andy Reid got criticized. Well, if you want to get criticized for drawing it up for your best players. And if it don't work, at least you went down with your best players. And so, listen, what I am saying is, Devin Booker, at the end of the game, I'm fine with an ISO play for Devin Booker.
Yeah.
I'm fine for pick and roll. I am fine anything I got to involve Devin Booker and Chris Paul. If I'm Monty Williams, that's why I'm drawing up. I'm drawing up a play for Devin Booker, probably, or Chris Paul. It's one of those two, but more than likely it's Booker. And I'm cool with an ISO play at the end of the game. I'm cool with that too. But not the whole game.
Yeah.
Okay, there's a major difference between the two. You do need to get your teammates involved. You can't shoulder the burden all on yourself. But when you get to the point of the course of a game where you get to the point where you have to have a basket, and let's sit here. Maybe this is what the Suns are thinking. Every possession we need a basket, thus we're going to Booker. Maybe that's what Max is trying to say. Well, they're just doing what you say, Wade. Every time you need a big bucket, you go your best player. Well, this is ridiculous. You don't do it for 87 possessions.
Yeah.
You do it when you really, really need a bucket. And this team was the second best team in the Western Conference. They had a 9-game winning streak during the playoffs, and they didn't play this way. And now they're up 2-0 in the finals. They didn't play this way. And so if game 1 and 2 came down to the wire and they draw up a play and it's ISO for Booker, okay, fine. Pick and roll Booker, Paul and Booker, you go with your best players. And I'm cool with Devin Booker. Even if he's double teamed and forces up a shot, I'm probably better than throwing it to a guy that's only taken 3 shots in the game in crunch time. I may be okay with it. I may go back and go, shoot, he should have passed it. Cam Johnson would have hit the 3. They would have won the title. Very well. But here's the thing. The reason you put the ball in the star player's hands, whether they're 2 for 20 or 19 out of 20, is that you trust, one, first of all, they're great players. Second of all, you're trusting to make the right decision. So when the ball is in their hands, you're trusting them to make the right decision. So maybe it's not that they're going to shoot the ball. Maybe the play is designed for them to shoot the ball, but they bring 2 people to them, and everybody on the other team knows they're going to probably go to the great player, right? And thus sets up the play for the role player. And that's what Michael Jordan did. Do you think the Chicago Bulls, when Michael Jordan passed the ball to John Paxson for the Bulls against, who was that?
The
Phoenix.
Suns, yeah.
Okay, in a game-clinching shot. Do you think when Jordan passed the ball to Kerr to beat the Utah Jazz, do you think those plays drawn up by Phil Jackson was all about Michael passing it first?
Absolutely not.
No! Hell no! The play was about Michael Jordan having the ball in his hands, making the right decision, and more often than not, Phil's probably going, MJ's going to shoot it. But MJ made the right play. He drew a defender. He kicked at the Kerr. He kicked at the Paxson. And those guys made him look brilliant because they made the shots. That's called trusting your teammates. Mm-hmm. And I feel like Monty Williams, I don't know if he doesn't trust his team, which seems a little bit harsh, but I don't understand why you're going iso ball throughout the game so much. At the end of the game, you go to your best player. If that's Middleton or Giannis, you go to those two guys and pick and roll. That's what the Bucks do. If you're the Suns, okay, fine. You go iso ball Booker. If that's where you need a bucket at the end of the game, I'm going down with my best player. And if Booker gets double teamed and forces up a horrible shot, well, you know what? Booker got us here. You know, he's the one, he and Paul got us here. Now, if I'm drawing up a play for Cameron Payne and Jay Crowder, I should be fired.
Yeah, well, and those are the things, right? Monty Williams will get questioned for running ISO for so much of the game, right?
Sure.
But Monty Williams is not going to get questions about, do you wish somebody else would have had the ball in their hands at the end of the game when the steal and alley-oop happened? That's not happening.
No.
They're not asking him those questions. Now, if Cam Johnson for some reason is bringing the ball up, and Drew Holiday steals it. There's like, why did Cam Johnson have the ball at the end of the game?
Right.
Those are the differences there that you're looking at. It's right. It's not like, so if literally Phil Jackson draws up the play for John Paxson and he misses a three and Phoenix wins that and it goes to game seven,
yes.
Then there's going to be some real questions for Phil. Like, why did Mike not have the ball in his hands? Like, why didn't you rely on your guy?
Exactly.
But those are clear situations where you know, and everybody in the building knows,
sure,
Mike's going to have the ball with 5-6 seconds left. It's going to be in his hands. What you just said during all that is they can make the decision and trust in their teammates, but they are the ones that made the decision, not Phil Jackson.
That's right.
Not Monty Williams, not Mike Budenholzer, mm-hmm, not anybody, right? It's those guys. You go down swinging, and you know that this guy had the ball in his hands. Mike made the decision to pass to Steve Kerr, to John Paxson. Mm-hmm. If they miss those shots, they'll be like, well, Mike trusted his teammates. It was right. His decision. And he might get some of the criticism for not wanting to take that shot.
Which
how
is
many
what
times
LeBron got
James
a lot
get it early in
when
his career.
Early career, yeah.
And so Mike might get that criticism because why did you pass? I don't care if you're double teamed. You're the greatest player that's ever lived,
right,
is what some people will say, right? Right. Why did you pass? Go win the finals.
Right.
But he trusted his teammates, and they knew. And you're talking about two great sharpshooters at the time,
right.
And he trusted that they were going to make a shot because they'd been there before.
But the criticism would be on the star player for maybe making the wrong play.
Not Phil Jackson.
But not the coach, yeah, because the coach let the best player
again,
have the
Monty
ball.
Not Monty Williams, yeah.
Right.
So Book passes off, and then they'll be like, well, Book should have done this on his own.
Now, sometimes you can, like, double and make and do unbelievable denial defense to where the star player doesn't get it, like maybe 4 or 5 seconds mm-hmm left at the end of the game. And then the other – and usually reporters are smart enough to understand, okay, that wasn't the play, obviously, to just alley-oop it, throw it in there, and hope to shoot a shot with their center. It was guarded. You know, Jordan couldn't get open, which that rarely ever happened. And so probably what Max is – I'm trying to read Max's mind, which is very scary right now. But Max is probably saying, well, listen, they are in a must-win situation, and they're going down with their superstar. So that you're sitting here criticizing them for going ISO all the time. And that's what they're doing. They're going down with their best player. They're letting him shoot 38% of the shots, Wade. I mean, what? That's what you mean, right, Wade? No, that's not what I mean. But I understand where you could probably
bring it,
take
bring
it that way.
That, yeah.
You could swing your narrative to fit the agenda that Max probably is trying to say. And I get that. I think you could say, well, Wade, I mean, what they're doing is they're treating every possession as the most important because it's a must win. Thus, they give the ball to Booker every single time. And so forth and so on. And what my saying is, it's at the end of a game or you're trying to stop a run, that's when you go to your go-to player to stop things. It's kind of like in baseball, if you need to stop a losing streak, sometimes you might have to kick that best pitcher you have and pitch him on 3 or 4 days rest instead of 5 full days of rest.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or in the playoffs, you got to go with a guy that, like, you know, Madison Bumgarner. Okay, he has 2 days off. Well, but he's still my best pitcher at 80%. I mean, think about the Giants. Would they have won Game 7 of the World Series in 14 if they didn't even give the ball to Madison Bumgarner because they were worried about 2 days rest?
Yeah.
They would not have won that game. And so they went to their stud pitcher, and they rode him, to a title. That was the right decision, clearly. And if Bumgarner gave up a home run and lost the game to Salvi in the bottom of the ninth, it was still the right decision. And there, that's what Max is trying to say. Here we go. Every possession should be treated like last possession. Now, see, I don't agree with that. I mean, I agree to an extent. I mean, if you have the laser focus to drop a great play on the last play of the game, if you could do that every single possession, yeah, you'd be great. Thing is, you don't have a timeout to set up every single play that you have because you have so many timeouts. And yes, they're going to be loose possessions. There always are.
Mm-hmm.
But when it's crunch time there at the end, you don't worry about Devin Booker. If Booker was 4 of 20, he's still going to get the ball in that situation.
Oh, yeah.
If he's 19 to 20, he's getting the ball in that situation. It's pretty simple. You trust your best players to make the right plays. Now, maybe that's what Max is saying is, well, they believe Booker makes the best decisions, so the ball's in his hands more often. I would argue Chris Paul is the best guy to make all these decisions.
Yeah.
And thus maybe is a tactical error as well. Now, maybe that's – I don't know. I'm confused, all right? Max, are you happy? I'm confused because the Suns have played – great ball throughout the year. They were up 2-0 in this finals. And then game three, they got beat handily. And Booker had a bad game, which is fine. And then And then game four and game five have been, it's ISO ball with Booker, and other guys that are shooting it well aren't getting even that many shots. And I think it affects them big time on the defensive end with Booker being worn down, and even Paul, because they pressure and bring it up the floor. And that's another thing to extend upon what Max said. Well, every possession should be treated like the last possession. It can't be that way because of the energy and fatigue and stamina. And so, you know, Booker can't play every single play like it's the last one. Neither can Chris Paul. If they did, they'd be completely worn out by halftime. But Booker is getting worn down, I think, on the defensive end because he's trying to carry too much of the load. I just don't think he has to carry that much of the load. But maybe I'm wrong. Maybe the rest of the guys are a whole bunch of schmucks. They were just great for a while, and they've disappeared in the finals. I don't believe that, but I'm very confused by it. And I wish I could figure it out. And I just would like to see the Suns go back to playing the way I saw them play in the first two games. And I know every Suns fan is like, well, duh, we won the first two. Of course you want to see it that way. No, I mean the style of play. Mm-hmm. Because you've seen it. Everybody watches. They understand that they have changed the way they play offensively. And it makes them much more predictable offensively. And it makes them, honestly, easier to guard. And yet the Suns, I think, have taken the bait and they hook, line, and sinker.
Yeah.
Do you think the Suns win tomorrow night?
I don't.
I don't either. I don't.
Not the way it's going right now.
I don't feel, unless they go back to Suns ball. And I don't see them doing it. And I hope they would. And maybe they will. Lord knows they got to make an adjustment to have any chance tomorrow night in Milwaukee. That place can be jumping and hopping. And I could see the Bucks rolling them. I really could. I hope I'm wrong. Local sports, I'll give that to you.
Yeah, we got a lot of postseason baseball, softball going on. K-18 State softball tournament was in Lucas this weekend. Osborne finished in fourth place there after winning their first game. They lost in the semis to Ellis and then ended up falling to Norton in four innings in the consolation 15-5. That played out where Russell actually won the championship, the K-18 softball, 14-0 in four innings over Ellis. So congrats to the Russell softball girls there. K-18 East Regional Baseball, as the championship went to Smith Center, 8-5 over Concordia CMB on Friday. All four of the teams, Concordia CMB, Clifton Clyde, Smith Center Red, and Clay Center, are all headed to the state tournament. We'll have that bracket posted at ncksports.com for the K-18 state baseball tournament once it becomes available. Pee-wee District Baseball starting tonight. You can find all the results and brackets at ncksports.com. Tonight's first-round games, topside games, are in Clyde Valley Heights against Concordia American Legion at 7. Wakanda takes on Washington around 8:30. Then the bottom side of the first-round bracket at Clifton, Bremen against Concordia Lions at 7, and Pike Valley against Osborne at 8:30 here tonight. First-round Pee-wee State tournament up there in Cloud County. And then American Legion Baseball AA Zone 3 tournament was supposed to start on Saturday in Beloit, but they have postponed with the rains that came in. They've moved that back. Start time will now be at 2 o'clock Tuesday for the first round. You can find that bracket as well at ncksports.com. So coming down to the end of the summer baseball season for a lot of these teams. Best of luck to those teams as they get rolling into state here with K-18 and Pee-wee and Zone for the Beloit team in American Legion.
All right, speaking of baseball, the Royals back on the field after the All-Star break with a series against the Baltimore Orioles, the worst team in the American League. The Royals had three games at Kauffman Stadium, and they won one.
That is a well-struck ball into center field from Trey, and the Oriole RBI leader adds another. A double from Hayes, a run-scoring single from Mancini, and it's 3-0.
Royals held scoreless for six innings by Matt Harvey, former Royal, as well as the former face of the Mets team. The Royals defeated in the 2015 World Series. The Royals left nine on base. Harvey entered the game with a record of 3-10, ERA of 7.7, but in his last four starts, the ERA is over 11. But how do you get better as a pitcher? You go against the Royals' offense. Royals have now lost 17 of the last 21 games, 6 of the last 7, falling to a season-high 18 games under 500. They're now 37-55. They have an off day today, thankfully. And they go to Milwaukee. Mike Minor on the hill for the boys in blue in Milwaukee. Coming up tomorrow, the Brewers leading their division. Here's Matheny on the struggles against Matt Harvey, who really looks like a washed-up pitcher except for yesterday.
Yeah, we didn't really have that many opportunities. I mean, you're talking Dozier having four of our six hits and really not a lot of opportunities. We had bases loaded one time with two outs, first and second with one. He made pitches when he had to. He had the lefties off balance with changeup, and the slider was good. We just couldn't get much going against him.
Carlos Hernandez got the start okay. Two runs in four innings. Young 24-year-old right-hander. Did enough to get another look as being the Royals' fifth starter. The Royals lose 2 out of 3 to Baltimore in Milwaukee tomorrow night. And I had a chance to go to the game. By the way, Hunter Dozier went 4-for-4 yesterday, which is a good sign, finally. So I went to the game with my oldest son. We were at their basketball tournament in Kansas City. So we went to the Royals game on Saturday night. And it was, so we get there. and they're handing out bobbleheads. And it's Hunter Dozier bobblehead night.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sitting here going, right away, I'm like, okay, cool, I'll give this to my youngest kid. My second thought was, only the Royals could give away a bobblehead of a guy hitting 170.
Yeah.
And so Dozier was a day late with his 4-for-4 performance. He should have done it on his bobblehead night. The other thing I want to point out is that, I know I'm not the only one because I found proof that this is true. But when you go to any sporting event, you get the cups, right? And usually you pay the extra dollar for the souvenir cup, whether it's a beer cup, a pop cup, or whatever. And so I did that, and so I had a couple of cups. It drives my wife insane when I bring all these plastic cups back from a sporting event, where it's Oklahoma, Nebraska, K-State, KU sporting event, or a Chiefs game or Royals game. I just do it to annoy her more than anything.
Yeah.
But I'm like, they're good cups. You can wash them out.
Yeah. I don't have a
wife.
But
you're a bachelor. You don't have to worry about that.
I have a wife that complains. They just stack up in my apartment. Right. I'm like, why do I have all these cups?
Dusty's got this big pyramid.
It's like, I've got – why do you need a Royals cup from every year you go to the game, right? Like, well, those are the ones that you definitely wanted when they won the World Series and stuff.
Yeah,
they had that trophy on them and stuff. Yeah. But it's like, why do I need a 2018 season Royals cup? But
well, here's what happens when I bring my cups home. My wife will say, especially if we're family and we go, because then we definitely get probably four cups, right? Because they don't refill your cup. By the way, they don't do refills for the Royals games anymore for pop. They used to, because of COVID, they don't. So you're not getting
the
value. Yeah, because
they used to have that sticker, one extra refill on this cup.
Yeah. So I had two beers. Full disclosure, I had two beers, so I had two cups. And then usually if the family goes, my wife might have a beer or two, so we might have three. She might have one, I might have two, or whatever. So there's three. How many cups does it take to form a set? Well, the answer is easy. It's four. So that's like my goal. Every time I go to a game, I'm like, okay, if I bought four, then I got four cups, I got a set. I'm taking them home. I don't care. I paid for the cup. I might as well take it home, right? But then what I do, and this is what I'm asking if other people do this, and be honest with yourself, ladies and gentlemen, if you're listening on the radio right now. Max, you be honest too. I'm talking to you, Max, and everybody else out there. When you go to a sporting event, like the other night, I had two beers. I had two cups. If I wanted a set of four, what do I do? The game's over. I'm looking down every aisle to see if there's two more cups I can grab to form a set of four. And yes, I just pour them out. Yes, it's somebody else's cup, but they left them. I pour it out, and then I can wash them. I get home. And so now this time I didn't. I just went with the two. My oldest son gives me static about it. That's probably why I didn't do it. And so as we're getting up after the game is over on Saturday night, I have my two cups. And I'm looking over to see if people left extra bobblehead deals. Because I'm like, I'll grab those.
Yeah.
Because not because I want them, but because I might bring them back to give to a kid here in Beloit that's a Royals fan. Mm-hmm. That's what I was thinking, honestly. Like, maybe my youngest son's classmates might want a bobblehead. I ain't gonna make money. I ain't gonna charge. If somebody wants to leave it. So there's a box on the ground, and I'm like, oh, maybe they left their bobblehead. And no, they had taken it out. It was an empty box. Mm-hmm. I'm like, okay. And my son's like, what are you doing, Dad? And I said, I'm just checking to see if there's a bobblehead there. He's like, who cares? I mean, and then I look over, and there's this kid. He's a teenager. He comes down our row, and he's looking for cups.
Yeah.
He's looking for cups. I'm not the only one that does that.
I do it.
Good.
Like, so we went. We
you need
to take
a set of four. A set is not complete until you have four. So I come home, and my wife goes, why do you have four cups? Honey, in order for it to be a set, it has to be four.
We used to take a trip. Some of the guys in my cousin's classes at St. John's, right, every summer we'd take a trip.
Uh-huh.
We did it 4 or 5 years in a row, and that one time we were walking around, we came home with at least 25 cups.
Oh,
probably.
Yeah. Oh, if you go around the whole stadium.
I couldn't drink any beer at that time, uh-huh. So I was like going finding people that did, left their beer cups because they're different design on them, right?
Right.
And I was like, get these, and everybody's like, some of them in our group were like, that's disgusting. That's somebody else's cup. I'm like, there's this thing called hot water and soap, right?
Yes.
That I can go ahead and wash these when I get back to my buddies here in Kansas City, and they'll be just as good as new. Somebody left a nacho helmet one time,
uh-huh.
Like the big helmet that they put the nachos on. Uh-huh. I'm grabbing that.
Yeah, so you rinse
clean that chili and cheese out of there. We're taking it home.
I would do the same thing.
Yeah, I'm like, if not for me, I'll give it to one of my nephews.
Right. Well, if people are worried about being sanitary, all you got to do is go to a ball game, go into the bathroom, and watch how many people don't wash their hands, and then touch the handle that you're going to touch when you leave. And you're going to draw the line at somebody's cups that you're not going to drink out of, and you're going to pick them up from the bottom. You're not going to put your fingers inside of them. And you're going to take them home, you're going to rinse them out. What I'll do is, if there's anything in them, I'll go to the bathrooms at Royal Stadium, wherever it is. I pour the little bit. Sometimes there'll be half a beer in there. Now, I don't drink that. Some people probably would. Pour that out. and then I just rinse it out. And then when I obviously take them home, here, honey, and I let her put them in the dishwasher.
Yeah.
She reluctantly does that. She's like, seriously, you got another four cups? Oh, yeah, you bet.
Did you see the text that we got?
No, what's the text?
A certain basketball coach from the same school that I was mentioning these kids that I go to the games with said his wife is the cup collector, not him.
Oh, she is.
So he.
By golly. Well, then I've got a woman to back me up too.
Yeah.
That's good. Not my wife. Somebody else's wife to back me up to tell. Yeah, it's okay. That's good to know. It's just I'm like, dude, these cups that you pay extra to have them. So why do you leave them?
That's what blows my mind.
Why do you leave them?
Why people leave them?
Yeah.
They one year right after the Royals won the World Series, they put like the margaritas in these cool cups that had the World Series logo on them.
Uh-huh.
And there's so many of these left. I'm like, I'm getting one of those as a collector's item.
You bet.
Like, what are we doing here? Just leaving these cups that you spend an extra dollar on?
Oh,
just
yeah.
get the paper cup if you don't want to keep it.
Oh yeah. It's not hard. You stay at the end of the game, and then you just walk around, and except there's other people that do it.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to be kind of quick on it to get your four. And then I've seen kids, like teenagers, they have a stack up above their
15,
head.
20 cups.
It's like, yeah. I don't know if I need that many. That seems to be a bit of an overkill. But I draw the line usually. I try to get a set of four. So if I go to Sooner game, Husker game, K-State, KU, football, basketball, Chiefs, Royals, whatever it might be, I'm trying. My goal's four.
Yeah.
Even though I got 1,000 cups at home, as my wife says. I'm like, honey, you have a lot of shoes, okay? It's all good.
Yeah.
Well, I don't have that many shoes. That's true. And I have my caps. I get that, too. All right, I'm going to let you go get Marvin over there real quick as we wrap it up here on the Sports Ticket today on a Monday. Monday's always a little bit longer because there's a lot to cover. So we mentioned the Royals. Now, there is hope for the Royals in the future. That is Nick Prado and Bobby Witt Jr. have been promoted to AAA. They are their two of their better prospects at the minor league level, and they are both tearing it up at AA Northwest Arkansas. And Bobby Witt Jr. is the number one prospect in the Royals organization, number seventh in all of baseball. Nick Prado is a fifth-ranked prospect in the Royals organization. And Prado has been absolutely fantastic. 15 homers, 43 RBIs, hitting .273 at AA, lots of extra base hits. Bobby Witt Jr., by the way, Prado's only 22. Bobby Witt Jr., how old is Bobby Witt Jr.? I forgot how old he is. But anyway, he had 16 homers, second in the league, 71 hits second in the league, 50 RBI, hitting .292. Those guys absolutely tearing it up at AA. So both of them have now been moved up at the same time, promoted yesterday to AAA Omaha with the Storm Chasers. So if you're North Central Kansas and you want to see Nick Prado and Bobby Witt Jr., the only time you could have done that before is if they happened to visit Wichita to play a road game against the Surge. Now you could go to Omaha and watch them when they have home games. And you can go spend a little bit of money, travel to Omaha, what is about 3.5-hour drive from this area. We went recently. I think that's how long it is. You can watch Prado and you can watch Bobby Witt Jr. And they could be the cornerstones of this future of the Royals. If you want to use comparisons, go back to the Moustakas-Hosmer days. There were people that were all excited about Hosmer and Moustakas, first-round picks, which is what Prado and Witt Jr. are. And they were highly touted and having great years in AA. They hit a whole bunch of home runs. And when they got promoted and they moved up and they got to play at certain places, people traveled to watch them play in the minor leagues. And then they turned out to be the cornerstones of Royals winning a World Series and making two World Series appearances. As a Royals fan, you can only hope and pray, if you want, that these two guys are going to bring the same type of success down the line to the Royals once they come up to the big leagues. Witt Jr. probably play third in the bigs if Mondesi's healthy, who plays short. If not, Witt Jr. is the shortstop of the future. And the first baseman, Nick Prado, who's been compared to Eric Hosmer quite a bit, even when he was drafted. So if you're a Royals fan, and I know the Royals are struggling, they're 18 games under .500, we make fun of the bobblehead guy hitting .170, and we're trying to collect a whole bunch of free cups because, you know, we are who we are. There is hope on the way in regards to two very good players that hopefully will pan out in the big leagues. And these guys, at least Witt Jr., looks to be a can't-miss prospect. So keep an eye on that. British Opens is in the books, the British Open. And there's a guy now that is really honestly the best player in the world, and he's only 24 years of age.
And with a power blast, it is a nerveless, it is a faultless performance from 24-year-old Colin Morikawa, who wins on his Open debut.
Colin Morikawa, 24, captured his second major championship on Sunday at the 149th British Open, becoming the first men's golfer in history to win his debut at two separate major events. He also became just the eighth golfer ever to win two majors before the age of 25. The Phenom finished 15 under for the tournament, besting second-place finisher Jordan Spieth, who was 13 under, and Jon Rahm and Louis Oosthuizen, who were 11 under. Morikawa, who won the PGA Championship this year, joins Tiger Woods as the second golfer to win the Open and the PGA Championship before the age of 25, and only three golfers in the history of the sport. Gene Sarazen, Bobby Jones, and now Morikawa have won multiple majors in eight or fewer starts at such events. That's pretty amazing. Now, he won the PGA Championship. That would have been last year because Mickelson won the PGA this year. But he's only had eight major starts. He's won two of them. That's 25% of the majors he's been in. He's won. He's only 24. Yeah, this kid's... And let's hear him, and I'll get your comments because I know you want to say something. Here's Morikawa on winning his second major. And listen to how... This is really a thoughtful response.
Mm-hmm. When you make history, and I'm 24 years old, it's hard to grasp, and it's hard to really take it in. You know, a quick little side note was, you know, when Phil won the PGA, I think he's 50 years old, right? I didn't look at him as, you know, this old guy winning. I looked at him as still competition that could really play well. You know, if he put everything together, which he did, he could play well and win. So at 24, it's so hard to look back at the short 2 years that I've been a pro and see what I've done because I want more. You know, it's so early on, and I enjoy these moments, and I love it, and I think I need to teach myself to embrace it a little more, maybe spend a few extra days sitting back and drinking out of this. But yeah, I just want more. When you're in these moments and you truly love what you do, which I love playing golf and competing against these guys, these are the best moments ever because the nerves push you to just be a better person.
That's a great answer. And he's only 24. He seems to be wise above his years.
I remember when he won the PGA, it was like, dude, this guy is well-spoken. He understands and like, it kind of felt like he was headed for something pretty big here. And obviously if he stays on the same track, he's headed for something huge. But,
yes, he is.
But he's very well-spoken for his age and kind of understands what it took to get there probably and what it takes to stay there.
Yeah.
And because not a lot of people that are 24 talk like he just did.
Oh, no, absolutely not.
At the highest level.
Very impressive. Very impressive. A couple of notes. COVID-19 causing problems with the Olympics in Tokyo. Coco Gauff, 17-year-old for U.S. in women's tennis, had to withdraw a positive test. There's an alternate on the USA gymnastics team that she's tested positive, so she's going to have to withdraw. And then, of course, the question is, who's she been around and blah, blah, blah. We know how that all works, right? Mm-hmm. So continue to follow things in regards to how COVID's affecting the Olympics over in Tokyo. No fans, of course, this year. And it probably wrecks some team situations. Argentina, I think, has some soccer players in quarantine now. So there's all kinds of issues that are going to... You're going to hear more and more of this as we continue through the Olympic Games, and it's going to mess up some folks' dreams, already has, of winning gold or just winning a medal.
Yeah.
Or just competing, let alone winning medals. And then I ended with this one. So we were in Kansas City, and I had this brilliant idea. So our last basketball game was at Hy-Vee Arena, which is old Kemper.
Yeah.
Which is amazing. I hadn't been there in 20-some years. And go down there, and they've renovated inside, and they have two levels of basketball courts for traveling basketball. So they put a whole nother platform between the lower and upper deck. Have you seen this?
I have not. I'm hoping to this weekend.
I'm going to be there again. So it's amazing what they've done with it, and it's pretty cool, actually. I'm impressed. A lot of money they put into it. The guy, apparently, that bought the Kemper Arena, he bought it for $1 because they were going to implode it. They were going to blow it up, which I've thought that for a while they might do.
Yeah.
But, and I don't think he's making money off the thing, but maybe he is. I don't know. But they're having to use some USC events there, too, in the future in August. So it's kind of interesting. But the point of the story is that we have a long drive to come home, about 3.5 hours from Kansas City back to Beloit, and wanted to meet a good friend of mine for lunch. Instead of backtracking, wanted to meet him over at Legends. So meet over in Legends. That's, if you don't know what Legends is, that's where Kansas Speedway is in Children's Mercy Park, which is the home of Sporting KC, and there's all kinds of restaurants and so forth and so on. Nebraska Furniture Mart, Cabela's, all that stuff, Dave and Buster's. So I told my buddy, I said, hey, let's meet, and we're going to eat, and we're going to go to Yard House, okay? That was the plan. And we get there, and there's a lot of cars, but there's a lot of cars. It's about 1:30, and we walk by the hotel. There's a hotel before we got to Yard House, and there's people coming out in some garb, and they're speaking different language, and it's like, okay. And so, now you know where I'm going.
Yeah.
Now it's clicking. So then, I didn't know what was going on.
Yeah.
Because I had checked to see if Sporting KC was playing games, and they weren't. Yeah. So I thought, okay, good deal. So we go in the Yard House, and there's not a lot of people in line, but it's busy. It's full inside. And I go up to the lady, and she goes, how many? I said, 3. And she says, it'll be an hour and 15-minute wait. I said, the heck with that. And I turned around and walked out. So then we went over another place, hour and a half wait. All of a sudden, I'm like, what's going on? There's something big going on. I see people with USA stuff on. I'm like, what's up with this guy with the Canadian sweatshirt on? Why are you wearing a sweatshirt? It's 88 degrees. So then we're like, well, go to this pizzeria. There's a lot of cars around. Maybe there's a short wait. We went there before. Oh, it went out of business. Oh, great. Well, let's run over. Hey, there's Fuddruckers. So we're like, oh, God. Oh, fine. We'll eat hamburgers, I guess. I didn't want to, but we wanted to get back.
Yeah.
So we go into Fuddruckers. There's this long line almost out the door, but it was better to wait an hour and a half. So it took us a half an hour to get up to the line and order, but that was about our only choice. And so there's an older couple. They come in, and they look at us, and they go, what's going on? And I'm like, yeah, that's a good question. There's obviously something big going on. I pull up my phone, and I put in soccer, Kansas City, okay, not Sporting KC.
Yeah.
And it says, USA versus Canada Gold Cup.
Gold Cup.
I'm like, 4 o'clock, and it's 1:30. I'm like, makes sense why everybody's eating right now. I'm like, great idea, Wade. Brilliant. Just go into the hub of activity when you want to get home sooner. So anyway, it was Canada and USA that played. We did get to eat, if everybody wanted to know, so we survived that. Anyway, I'm guessing some people might have been eating and were behind and had to wait a while and might have got into the park just a little bit late after the beginning of the soccer match.
Yeah.
Do you know what happened? The USA and Canada in their soccer match, which was in the Gold Cup, they're in the same group. Both teams are advancing to the next round. But this was to win the group stage and have a better favorable matchup the next round. USA and Canada played, and Shaq Moore scored 20 seconds into the match for the United States. It was the fastest goal in Gold Cup history, and nobody scored the rest of the match.
Nothing
was the final. Yeah. USA scored one goal in the first 20 seconds, and if you were late to get there because you're in line and trying to eat and you got there a few minutes after the match started, you missed the only goal the entire game.
I saw something, actually, now that you said it like that, I saw something in passing or heard something that was like, yeah, and then nobody else scored after that. 20 seconds. I didn't remember. I wouldn't have been able to tell you how much time was into the game.
20 seconds.
But I did hear something. I think it was just while I was working on something. I had the TV on and heard somebody say something about it. So
20 seconds.
Yeah, it's...
Yeah.
Yeah, but when you started going there, I was like, yeah, they had Gold Cup stuff in Kansas City. I don't know if they're doing multiple games there, if they're going around different places. But yeah, once you started talking about that, I'm like, oh, yeah. Because you go out there, it's like, what is going on here?
This is kind of interesting. The U.S. men soccer team, they won the group record. They went 3-0. They'll play a quarterfinal July 25th at Arlington against a loser, Costa Rica and Jamaica. And Canada moves on despite losing yesterday. The U.S. ended Canada's team record 8-game winning streak during the match at Children's Mercy Park in Kansas City yesterday. The U.S. is unbeaten against Canada in 20 home matches since 1957. That's interesting. But Canada had a team record 8-game winning streak until they got snapped yesterday, 20 seconds in. So that took place yesterday in Kansas City. And then going back to our experience at the Royals game, so Kyle Beisner, he's athletic director of Beloit. His son's on a traveling basketball team, and they're at Kansas City, but they were going to be done on Saturday. We had to come back on a Sunday and play one game. And I said, well, we get to go to a Royals game. And he said, yeah, they played well last night. They won 9-2. They had 15 hits, and they're 6-for-12 and runners in scoring position. I said, Kyle, let me tell you something. We're going to go to this game tonight, and the Royals are going to get a no-hit by a no-name pitcher, or they're going to get shut out, or we're going to be down like 10-0 after two innings. Down 7-0 after two innings. That's what happened. I was barely off. Brady Singer had the worst start of his career, pulled in the third. It was 7-0, and I'd barely drank part of my beer.
Yeah.
It was 7-0. My son goes, huh, what do you know? I know. We're just having fun. Let's look around, enjoy the park, whatever else. And it was still fun. It was great to be at a game. That's the first sporting event I've been to since COVID in regards to pro. And it was still a blast, even though the Royals lost. And they did score 4 runs, 8-4. And then friends of mine went yesterday, and the Royals didn't score a single run. Couldn't do anything against a guy that's washed up in Matt Harvey. So, but I picked the wrong night. Friday was a night to go. That's when the Royals did something special. But I got my Hunter Dozier bobblehead and my two cups short of a set by two, but I'll get there. I'm determined to get there. And my wife's going, God, not again.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or sunflowerstateradio.com.